All right, guys, that music can only mean one thing. It is time for the episode that many of you have requested, and that is a nostalgia episode on Muhammad Hassan. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Everyone get ready. We're going to get everything going right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead. But the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this September 30th, 2020. Hope everyone's doing just fine. And I think you're going to be doing better after this episode because, you know, I have been talking about this for a while. Many of you have called me out for not doing this episode, saying I would do it and do it, and I just haven't got around to it. I got distracted, or I don't even know why, but no longer will you have to wait. Now that I've built up this episode to be the greatest thing ever, I've set the bar a little bit too high. I think that that's a little bit dangerous on my part. I'm going to do the best that I can covering Muhammad Hassan as far as his best moments, how he got started, certainly hottest moments in WWE, what made him so damn hot as a heel, probably one of the hottest heels WWE has ever had, even though he was only there for a short time. And we're going to dive into exactly why people didn't like him and what made him just so damn good. And of course, we're going to get into the event that led to his departure in WWE, forced to let the character go, let Mark Copani, the man who played Muhammad Hassan, go. And also play a little bit of what if, you know, like what if this guy didn't get banished from WWE and he had continued? What would have been like? What would have been? What were the possibilities? So we're going to get into that. This is going to be a really fun one for me, because I think this is a heel that is sometimes forgotten by fans, or maybe you have no idea who I'm talking about, but you will after tonight. So thank you guys for joining me. And as always, this is my final show for the week as far as my personal show that I do, my actual voice doing the show. But I'll be back on Sunday with a co-host reviewing the entire week in WWE, Sean Harford, who I'm looking forward to talking with. And shout out to you on Patreon. Appreciate your support. And if you'd like to join Sean and come on the show, well, you can do so at patreon.com/WWE podcast and get an entire ad-free experience for the library of this show. Also on youtube.com/the WWE podcast and Twitter. Yeah, I'm kind of back at wrestling_audio, slowly building up all the years of followers that I gained and then lost in the blink of an eye on May 19th this year. It's like a grave. You know, I think of May 19th and I'm picturing like a tombstone with my username on it, and it's just sad. So it's kind of starting from scratch there, but nonetheless, I appreciate the support. And if you want to join me there, please do so. And on Instagram at WWE_podcast. So we're going to get to Muhammad Hassan in just a minute, but voicemails you guys have been sending to me pretty regularly now, and I want to make sure that I address them. So let's get to the voicemail for tonight. And there looks like there's just one, which is fine. And then we've got a question from an email. So we'll get through that, and then we'll dive into Muhammad Hassan. So let's take a listen.
Yes, hi, it's Tim from Arlington, Texas. Sorry about the two botched calls. I'm safely home in my driveway now, so everything should be fine. But I haven't listened to your Monday night review yet on Raw. I'm about to get to that here in a minute. I was listening to your pay-per-view review, and I was excited to hear what you had to say about Andrade and Angel Garza, and then unfortunately you were it was very lackluster to you. But then your co-host did mention a couple things, which got me thinking. Okay, well he saw them, so like if I would think. Or at least encourage, maybe it's worth a rewatch. Go back and rewatch that match. Maybe even rewatch the match beforehand. That was the determining match to who was going to face the Street Profits. Because that's when I first noticed it. And I was kind of excited to see the match in the pay-per-view and was actually thinking that during Clash, they might have a chance to actually take the belts from the Street Profits. Just because I noticed they were working well together, and that's never happened with them before. And then during the match, they were really, really a tag team. And I was very impressed. And I was like, wow, they put their differences aside. There was times where they were just working tags in the corner over and over. There's a time where Andrade got thrown off the ropes, and Garza grabbed him before he could snap back. They were just, I mean, they were working as a tag team, and I thought it was wonderful. And I thought maybe they were trying to make this whole thing like Zelina, since she left, maybe she was the wedge, and maybe they're going to work better together now that she's not there barking at them. And then maybe Zelina's going to do much better now that she's not trying to manage these two. But anyways, I just want to put my two cents in about that because I did really enjoy that match. And I would encourage maybe you go rewatch it with this new view, thinking like, okay, let me see them, you know, perform as a tag team, because maybe if you didn't have that thought going in, maybe it was just kind of lackluster because of that. But anyways, that's all I have to say about right now. I'm going to go listen to your next podcast and maybe give you another call back. Thank you.
Hey Tim, thanks for calling in, and thanks for sticking with the show and giving your two cents, and also getting home safely. That's always a good thing. So, as far as Angel Garza goes and Andrade at the pay per view when they face the Street Profits, I think the difference how we view the match lies in this. I care more about a story than the actual athleticism of a match. And the story going into this was lackluster at best, which when you have a very poor story or you have a very mediocre story, it automatically takes the match down a peg or two. And I'm all for athleticism. I'm all for, you know, great performances and chemistry, as you pointed out. And I agree. But the point of it, I think, was where I was kind of down on it was that it just didn't have a great story behind it. And yeah, they did end up having a decent match. Like that's not up for debate. I think that is not where my difference lies. I think my difference lies when the story always supersedes the actual athleticism, because the athleticism oftentimes is a cover for a bad story or no story. And WWE oftentimes uses athleticism as a crutch for fans to perceive the match as good, when in fact it's very superficial to just look at the athleticism and not appreciate a good story. I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm not trying to insult you by any means. My point though is, I think that a better story between these two teams would have skewed my reaction to the match higher had the story made more sense, and I didn't see it on Monday Night Raw. And, you know, also with Andrade and Garza, yeah, they were more of a team, no doubt. But at the same time, they fought forever. No one knew why. Honestly, nobody cared. And Zelina's on her own now, thank God. She was great as a manager. I mean, let's be honest. She was great as a manager, advisor, whatever label you want to put her on. But as I always said, she is the best and is going to be her best when she's on her own with a championship over her shoulder or around her waist. But no, I appreciate your thoughts. It's a good way to look at the match if you are into that kind of thing where you value athleticism. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Look, I may be old school. It's weird saying that at 35 years old. Boy, oh boy. But I'm trained to want a good story over wanting a, quote, five-star athletic match. That's just how I view it. And how you view it, hey, cool. If you enjoyed the match more than I did, then, you know, more power to you. That's just the way my brain is wired when I rate wrestling matches. So, but nonetheless, thank you so much, Tim. Please feel free to call back. I'd love to hear from you. And if you're listening and you're like, how do I get on the show? How do I do that? Well, easy. You can either email me a voicemail. You can do that by just using your phone and creating a file and then sending it to me. Or an easier way is calling us at 518-952-0247. That's where you can leave a voicemail. You guys have been doing that pretty regularly now, which is great. I'm glad you're taking advantage. It's good to have other voices and listeners on the show to get your two cents in. And it just adds variety. So thank you. And let's get to a email now. This email comes to us from Lucas Iyer. And I hope I got that right. And he says, hi, Matt. Wanted to give my latest thoughts on the WWE product. First, where did Raw Underground go? I thought that had a lot of potential. Next, Retribution. I think this should end at Survivor Series in a 5-on-5 match. Bayley and Sasha Banks. I think this should start in the Cell with a hurt Sasha versus Bayley. Bayley should win and really hurt Sasha. Then Sasha should return at the Rumble and win it. Ooh, I love that. Ooh. I like that. Thank you, Lucas. I'll keep going here. Match 2 should be at WrestleMania. You're booking what I'd love here. Sasha should lose that and at the the program should continue. And then Sasha should win Money in the Bank, cash it in on Bayley. And the last match should be at Backlash. And it should be billed as, can Sasha retain her first title? Lucas, wow. First of all, let me go a little bit piece by piece here. Raw Underground, where did that go? Hopefully it went home, right? Hopefully it's gone. Hopefully it just walked out the door and it's not allowed back. That's what I hope Raw Underground has done. Or maybe it's taking a break to reevaluate, repackage. I don't know. I haven't heard anything of exactly why Raw Underground was not included this week. But I'll tell you one thing. I didn't miss it. I wasn't throughout the show like, oh man, where's Raw Underground? Why haven't they mentioned Raw Underground? I wasn't sitting there saying that. Let me just tell you that right now. I will say, as much as I'm bashing Raw Underground, there's something good there. It's just maybe an execution, kind of like the whole Retribution angle. There's a small seed of goodness somewhere to have another platform for people that you may not have otherwise known to come in and also be on Raw, but not really be on the Raw proper show, right? So, I don't know. If it were up to me, I'd still scrap the damn thing, and maybe that's what happened here, but I have my doubts. So we'll see next week. Maybe they just took a week off, and that's my guess. As far as Retribution 5-on-5, yeah, it's weird that you're already trying to, I shouldn't say you, but the angle that you're proposing is saying that you want to already end this at Survivor Series. Well, let me say that, you know, maybe I'll back up here. I'm for this Retribution angle just also going away. I've said it many times. I'm not going to reiterate why the Retribution angle makes absolutely no sense. It's like negative sense. It doesn't even make a little sense or just kind of like no sense. It's actually somehow negative sense. Is that a thing? If it could be, then I maybe just invented a new term. But that's what I think about Retribution. I think it is a extremely poorly executed angle. It had something good there, as Zach Smith had on in the pre-show for the pay-per-view of Clash, and he said there's a seed of something there, and that's exactly what it is, but they have executed it probably the worst that you could probably execute this angle. And so to end it at Survivor Series, you know, for me to say already ending it, that may be a good time to end it, or just forget it ever happened. But Survivor Series, I can live with this for another month and a half or 2 months until I don't know when Survivor Series is, probably mid-November. So yeah, let's do it. Let's end it at Survivor Series, and then Retribution loses, and they still retain their contracts. That's probably what's going to happen. Bayley and Sasha Banks, as far as your booking angle goes here, I'm with you about Sasha getting in the cell hurt. Bayley wins at Hell in a Cell and beats Sasha Banks at Hell in a Cell. Injures her to the point of just she's going to be out for a while. Uncomfortable. An uncomfortable segment. You know, maybe she puts the chair in her neck again. Maybe a concerto. I don't know. Something that is just absolutely disgusting. That's what I want from Bayley. I actually am waiting. I'm willing to wait for Sasha to win. I'm with you. I love that. And then she should return in the Rumble and win it. I love that as well. Like, that is awesome. And that's where they meet at WrestleMania, where she's forced to face Sasha Banks. Bayley is forced to see her. You could stretch it out that long. If the injury angle happens and you have Sasha off TV for a couple of months, that gets you through the end of the year. Boom. January's here. Rumble season. And that's exactly what I would do. That's a great, great suggestion. Where you kind of lose me a little bit is continuing it through Money in the Bank and Backlash. I mean, I think WrestleMania should be the end-all, be-all for this angle. I mean, to go out, well, how far is WrestleMania now? So it's essentially early October and everything. WrestleMania is in early April. So you got, what, 6 months? That's a long time. That's a long time to get to WrestleMania. And then you're talking about 8 months to get to Money in the Bank. So I don't think I'd go on that long, but I'm for the slow burn. I love, at least through your booking of fantasy booking of WrestleMania. That is a very, very good. I love it. So thanks so much, Lucas, for your email. Much appreciated. And by the way, email me, guys, at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the fantasy book, I can read your fantasy booking on the air and comment on it right here. So, all right. Well, let's get to it. Let's get to Muhammad Hassan, a man that was, again, the title of this show speaks for itself, was one of the hottest heels in WWE ever. And this guy was here from 2004 to 2005. Essentially a year, this man was here and was able to generate heat that only today's heels can dream of. Now, let me set the stage. WWE in 2004, you're well into the Ruthless Aggression era at this point. You have Triple H kind of running the show, Eugene floating around, right? You have Brock Lesnar gone now from WWE. He is in his Minnesota Vikings failed tryout at in 2004. So that's the stage. Goldberg's gone. Stone Cold has taken a hiatus. So you have Evolution running things. It's 2004. That's the setting here. And you have Shawn Michaels, by the way, who is one of the top babyfaces in the WWE at this point. And his second run is well underway, and he's hot as a babyface. Undertaker running wild as well. He's still the dead man. He returned to the dead man in 2004, so he's fresh back with his gimmick, one of the greatest gimmicks of all time. He's no longer the American Badass at this point. So those are the players, some of the players, that are going on at this time. And WWE, outside of Triple H, who is, again, I think he's one of the greatest heels of all time as well, but, and certainly much longer in WWE, but I don't think that, and it's hard for me to say this, so I'm kind of hesitant in saying it. What my instinct to say is that Muhammad Hassan, at his hottest was hotter than Triple H at his hottest in terms of heel heat. That may be up for debate. Certainly the longevity of Triple H and how long people hated him and how good he was at cutting promos to get people to boo him and all that. He was really good. And people, I think, oftentimes overlook Triple H as how good he was at being a heel. But was anyone ever as hot as Muhammad Hassan in terms of generating heat? Now, you may ask, well, what the hell did he do? Why do people hate him right off the bat? Well, I just laid out the WWE landscape for you. And in 2004, you are 3 years removed from 9/11. It's still semi-fresh in people's minds. I mean, one of the worst tragedies in United States history doesn't just disappear from your minds overnight. And certainly something like that, no matter how much time passes, doesn't ever leave you. So when we look at the people that attacked the United States, a lot of them looked like Muhammad Hassan. Now, Muhammad Hassan was billed as an Arab American that spoke truth to the people in his promos, which is, I think, a lot of the reason why people hated him, is because he spoke truth about people's kind of innate discrimination against Arab Americans and exposed it. And when he exposed it, it really opened up wounds that people didn't know existed. Because let's be honest, in 2004, from 2001 forward, and even to this day to some point, to some degree, you can't tell me that, you know, if you're sitting on an airplane and you see somebody that maybe have resembled somebody that, hijacked one of the planes in 2001, that you're not probably thinking, oh boy, could I be next? It's human instinct. It's not racist. It's not discriminatory. You're just sitting there thinking, like, how can your brain just assimilates possible danger that you could be in? I mean, that's just the reality of it. So when you have Muhammad Hassan come out there and his music I played at the beginning of the show, coming out as an Arab American, exposing people's discrimination, speaking truth, boy, do people hate that. I mean, you're a heel and you speak the truth, nothing worse. I mean, that's a heat magnet waiting to happen. So you have people's discrimination being exposed. You have him really good on the mic. A guy that was in his early 20s when he came to WWE. My God. I mean, so he's fresh out of the box. Looks like $1 million. Plays the Arab American gimmick brilliantly. You know, he's not Arab, by the way. But you would have never known. He is, again, just Google him, Muhammad Hassan. You would think that he fits right in. So let's talk about how he got started. So originally he was in OVW, and he was actually under the ring name at that time as Mark Magnus in 2002. So that famous class of 2002 from OVW of John Cena, Batista, and Brock Lesnar, he was in OVW at that time. And he didn't debut in WWE, though, until December 13th, 2004. It was during an in-ring segment with Mick Foley. And he debuted also with, don't forget about this, Daivari. So Daivari was his manager, which I think he played also very brilliantly. Speaking in a native tongue, being obnoxious, but he could also speak English pretty damn well. So it wasn't one of those, yeah, he speaks his native language, but you don't really even understand his broken English. Like, he wasn't Oscar, right? Like, you understood what he said when he spoke English very easily, but he was obnoxious when he spoke the native language. And it just brought back 9/11 fears. There's no other reason for the magnitude of the heat he got. Now, you may talk about, well, there's been foreign invaders before, you know, like Ivan Koloff. I mean, you could go back down the list of the foreign invaders that have come down that have been successful in WWE being a heel. Just because you're from a different country, people don't like that because there is that sense of, nationalism, of pride in your country. Although, I don't know, today's a little bit turbulent, but in general, that's how the psychology works, that when you bring in somebody from another country, they get booed. I mean, typically, you look at Rusev, right? I mean, he's not in WWE anymore, but just go down the list. And so he was brought in, and it was immediately a heel character that people hated, and it fed on the stereotypes of Arab Americans. All of them are terrorists, right? Like, that all of them, anyone that wears a turban is a terrorist. They're tied with Al-Qaeda. Like that is what people thought. Not everyone, but when you expose that discrimination in people, they don't like it. So why don't we take a listen to some of his promos? And this one actually came out December 27th, 2004. So pretty freshly out of the box, as I said earlier, to kind of requote myself. But that's what he was in December 27, 2004. He interrupted Stacy Keibler, who was talking about her New Year's resolutions of bending backwards and forwards. And I mean, you look at the women in 2004, man, you talk about just sexualizing women as objects. It's almost startling at that time. But let's take a listen, and we'll comment.
You know, I guess that I don't find this as surprising as I find it disgusting that a country that is a den of lies and a cesspool of hypocrisy can put on this facade of holiday cheer and goodwill towards all men. But in reality, America does not wish goodwill towards all men. Only those that they see fit to show it to. And right now, especially right now, that does not include my Arab brothers. These aren't just my personal beliefs, people. These are undisputable, cold hard facts. A recent poll done at Cornell University, a prestigious American Ivy League institute, shows that at least half of all Americans believe that Arab Americans should have their civil liberties limited.
All right, so you kind of get the gist. I mean, how do you dispute that? I mean, he's unlikable. But I don't see anything in which is untruthful there. Again, you get the gist if you've never heard him before. And you would think that this guy is a grizzled veteran. You know, you don't have somebody come in like this and be able to speak the way he speaks. And with confidence, minimal stuttering, and the poise and the knowledge, all of it. And right off the bat, I mean, he was... It looked like he had come in and was, you know, somewhere else for 10 years and WWE picked him up. And that's not the case. So he came in. He didn't look green off the bat. He looked like he belonged immediately. A great physique. Again, playing on the stereotypes, playing on people's fears of Arab Americans, all of them are terrorists kind of thing, and discrimination that you may or may not even know you have against those individuals, especially back then. And it just worked. I mean, you hear the heat. And that actually was kind of quiet compared to some of the times I've heard. And so you get it. And it was damn brilliant. So let's continue a little bit further and take a listen.
Independence, I don't feel like a free man. Do you feel like a free man right now? In front of all this tyranny, do you feel like a free man? No, do you feel like a free man when you walk through the airports and you feel people stare at you? No, do you feel like a free man right now with all these people's icy glares on the back of our heads like we did something wrong? No, I don't feel like a free man. No, I've never felt like a free man. I felt like a prisoner in my own country, and damn it, I'm not going to take it anymore. You people have no idea what it's like to be me, to step in my shoes. But it ends tonight. It ends tonight. Because tonight, when I win the 5-way elimination match and become SmackDown champion, on top of the world, looking down on all of you, like you've looked down on me and my people for so many years.
All right, so this is just brilliant stuff that I've never seen a heel speak more truth and get so much heat. Typically, a heel will tell lies, which irritates you because nobody likes lying, but truth stings much more when it's something you don't want to hear but you can't dispute. That is the true essence of a good heel, is when they speak the truth. And Muhammad Hassan, did I play anything for you that is not right? I mean, if you go back, just YouTube it, or you can go on the network and search Muhammad Hassan, there's nothing that he says that is untrue. Yet I remember at the time getting extremely irritated with the character and wanting to see someone beat his ass. I mean, that is what I wanted, and he exposed my own discrimination. Just didn't even, you know, like, there was nobody cheering for him. Nobody was cheering for him, right? Nobody. It was mass discrimination against the heel character that was, I mean, unlikable as a person, as a character, but also comes back and talks about why people are booing him, and it's really good. I mean, he got to work with so many top names, like Shawn Michaels. He got to work with The Undertaker. He even worked with Stone Cold Steve Austin in a Stone Cold Court segment. So he worked with a lot of big names in a short amount of time, and it was really just amazing. So let's take a break, and then on the other side, we're going to get to the moment that led to him leaving WWE. We're going to play that segment for you, and also fantasy book of where he could have been in the annals of WWE had he not been let go, and the pressure from UPN, the network UPN. So let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Alrighty, everybody, let's get to that moment that led to the demise of the Muhammad Hassan character. Again, UPN was the network that WWE SmackDown ran on in 2004, and the network was not happy with what had taken place. So let me set the stage once again. This is labeled as one of the most controversial moments in WWE history. And when I was watching it live, I even remember going, well, that's, you know, that's like, I didn't go, oh my God. I was just like, kind of like, yeah, I mean, I didn't know it was that controversial until after the fact. And we'll explain why. But setting the stage here, so what had happened is this all took place on SmackDown, and it took place on July 4th of all times. July 4th. It was taped on July 4th, so Independence Day, but it didn't air till July 7th. And SmackDown general manager Teddy Long put Muhammad Hassan in a number one contenders match against The Undertaker at the Great American Bash, and placed Daivari in a match that night against The Undertaker. And Daivari was beaten, but after Hassan began to pray on the ramp, which summoned five masked men dressed in black shirts, ski masks, and camo pants. They were armed with clubs and piano wire, and they beat and choked out The Undertaker. And Hassan put the camel clutch on Taker after that. And this is probably the most controversial part right now, is after all that happened, the masked men lifted Daivari above their heads and carried him away. The symbolism of that, that he was some kind of sacrifice. The problem is that 3 days later, the London bombings took place. And the footage aired unedited on UPN in the US and then on The Score in Canada, with an advisory warning shown several times during the broadcast. I'm reading through. If it sounds like I'm reading, it's because I'm kind of looking at, making sure I don't miss any details here. So all that being said, there was a ton of criticism from WWE, or on WWE, a lot of heat on them. There was attention in the New York Post, TV Guide, Variety, and a bunch of other outlets. And it was something that WWE, their hands were forced. With the London bombings taking place, and this angle's taking place just prior, there was massive heat on the company. And UPN decided that it would monitor the storyline closely, and it did not want the Hassan character on its network. So Hassan was later seen. I mean, this wasn't the last time you saw him, but he delivered a promo a week later on July 14th and announced, really just spoke to the criticism of that angle, that people assume he's a terrorist. That how do you know that those people in ski masks were Arab? How do you know that that's what he was a sacrifice? I mean, they tried, and it was still the nail in the coffin of the character. And it was a damn shame that he just was gone out of nowhere because of that simple angle, and with the London bombings taking place. Just bad timing. And it's really a shame. So, well, let's take a listen. I promised some audio from this. Let's listen to this segment unfold.
Like, This must be what Muhammad Hassan meant earlier tonight when he said Daivari was going to be a sacrifice for a greater good, and that sacrifice would have its reward.
I think you're right, Cole. Hello. All right, so we're going to kind of pause it there. And it was what you didn't see was after the piano wire was used on Undertaker, that all of the men were like kind of kneeling as if it was a sacrifice. And it was a little uncomfortable now that you think about it, looking at this 15 years later. But seeing what was done, it did resemble a little bit too closely to real life of what some of those actual terrorist groups do. So I get it. Tons of pressure on the network, and the network was not happy. And the network said, "Hey, you get rid of Daivari, or things are going to blow up." I mean, like it was the only choice that they had. So that's where it was left. And then from there, they just brought Daivari out. Essentially just put them over their heads, all six men, put them up as a sacrifice, and they walked up the ramp with them high above their heads as a sacrifice. And it was it's still uncomfortable to watch even this all this time later, but it was so effective. And who could have predicted the London bombings happening, right? So still one of the greatest heels of all time, in my estimation, greatest heel characters of all time, even if he was there for a quick minute. Now let's play a little bit of devil's advocate. Say that never happened, or say the network didn't get a ton of heat because the London bombings never happened. Well, I think there's only one destination for Mark Kopani, i.e. Muhammad Hassan, and that is with the WWE Championship over his shoulder. There was no doubt in my mind that would have been the evolution of the character or the progression of the character to become champion for a long time, because he had just introduced, he had Daivari, of course, who took the hits for him, but he also then introduced six masked men. A little bit suspicious I'm talking about masked men considering the whole Retribution angle. Now they look nothing like Retribution, but this is nothing original from WWE to bring in people that are masked. We don't know their identity, but this is nothing new. But at the same time, I think having Muhammad Hassan run this kind of this group of anti-discrimination, yet people are discriminated against him, which is kind of a weird dichotomy, isn't it? People are discriminating against him and booing him because of his heritage and because of what he possibly represents and because of what had happened in 9/11, all of that. Yet he's the one calling out the discrimination. Kind of weird, right? So I think he would have been very successful. He was certainly young enough to have at least another 10 years in him, maybe more. Now, would he have had to evolve from this character that just constantly comes out and essentially cuts the same promo in every crowd about why they're booing him and getting in people's heads and all that, of which I've described in at length now of why people booed and why he called out people for booing him? He probably would have had to evolve. And what that would have looked like, it's hard to tell, because this was working so well, and they probably would have gone until it wasn't working anymore. People got bored with it. It was the Ruthless Aggression era, so it was still TV-14. If he had survived until 2008, they would have had to dumb this down a little bit more, given the PG era started. So I think he would have succeeded very well in this role for a couple of more years, and then probably had to evolve. Again, maybe that's darker. Maybe it is a little, maybe grow his hair out, get some more guys on his team, run a massive stable. But he would have been WWE champion, and I would have taken that run and had him be champion for a year plus. I would have just absolutely loved it. Have him constantly brag about how he is on top, looking down now, as he said in one of his promos. He's the one looking down at everybody else, and that they should look up to him and idolize him, and that he is the moral code that they should follow. That would have been brilliant, and it's really a damn shame that he never got that run. He was Intercontinental Champion for, there was like seconds at one point, but that was the only championship he ever really captured, and the WWE Championship was his destiny. It really was. How pissed would the fans have been had he been champion for a long time. People would have lost their minds at that time. And could you, I guess the question is, could you do this character today? I don't think so. I don't think the character like this, if you took Muhammad Hassan of 2005 and stuck him in the WWE product of 2020, I don't think it would work from the perspective of, and again, assuming fans are back in an arena, right? I mean, to hear the reaction, I think there would still be some discrimination there. You'd probably see some boos or hear some boos, but I don't think WWE would go for it considering the real risk that you're really exposing a specific nationality and also at the same time exposing the fans' discrimination towards that specific nationality and heritage, and that those people that are actually of that heritage, of like Indian descent, Arab descent, that actually watch WWE, of which there are a good number of people, may turn them off. It would be a really bad PR move in today's WWE. I don't see it as a successful gimmick from a PR standpoint. Now, if this was a US-based only company, and they stuck this in today's product, it probably could work. He's so good. If you stuck Mark Capone of 2005 in today, it could probably still work. And the whole foreign invader angle never gets old. It's a timeless heel story that has been used for decades in professional wrestling. I mean, it's not a new concept, but it went to the extreme with this particular character of an Arab American because of an extreme terrorist attack, once in a lifetime, really, really awful event that, again, hopefully never occurs in my lifetime anyway, or ever again. But I don't think it would work today because of the really insane PR. Imagine the press WWE would get. Imagine the backlash. Holy crap. People would lose their minds today. It would be a terrible idea to do that in today's WWE, in today's world and culture, where everybody has a voice and everyone seems to be super sensitive for certain things and just looking for a reason to pounce. I wouldn't do it. But boy, oh boy, did it fit back then. And I'd encourage you to go back in WWE and just Google him, or YouTube him rather, and check out his promos. Check out his in-ring. And by the way, in-ring, he was good. He was good. And notice I didn't even mention the in-ring. See how much character and story matter as I kind of wrap up from the beginning of my show, answering a question about athleticism versus story. Notice I didn't even talk about his in-ring ability, which is, by the way, serviceable and totally fine and I'd say good and probably better than his age would tell. At 20-some years old, 21, 22, whatever the heck he was, it was not even that important. Isn't that crazy? And maybe none of you were even thinking it until I just brought it up, that the in-ring ability was also there, that he was a good performer and that he could tell a good story. His facials were really good. But the moves, they don't matter so much. It's about motive, character, and story and building stars. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it with what I think draws people to wrestling and draws people to stories, draws people and continues to draw people to tune in and see what's happening next. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? You want an example of that, of why I think that is why people tune in, is to see what happens next in the storyline, a really good story? Look no further than Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon. What are they known for? Not five-star matches of today's standard of what a five-star match is. They were known for, what is Austin going to do next? What's Vince going to do to Austin to piss him off? And what's Austin going to do to get back at him? That's all you cared about. You didn't care how they performed in the ring. Their matches were not that good at all. You were just waiting for the stunner. So there's your example, if you want one, of when athleticism doesn't matter at all. So Nonetheless, guys, this has been a blast. I'm glad I finally did Muhammad Hassan. I hope this satisfies your thirst for it. I can do a follow-up or whatever you guys need. Or if you have a request that has nothing to do with this, but you want me to do something, please send it to realwwepodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram at @WWE_podcast. And I'd love to be able to fulfill your request for a wrestling nostalgia show. You can also hit me up on Patreon at patreon.com/WWEpodcast. And you can even come on the show and co-host with me for an entire show, as will be happening this Sunday with Sean Harford. And I'm looking forward to that very much. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Please give us a subscribe on YouTube and on any podcast that you're listening to. Helps us out. Rating and review, obviously, as well. And that's pretty much it. Follow me on Twitter @wrestling_audio. And as always, I'll talk to you next time. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.